to another Tadpog podcast, a weekly show where two old guys talk about old games. I'm your bearded host, Tyler, and I like cats more than I like dogs.
And I'm your bespectacled host, Dave, and I am literally 3 credit hours away from earning my Toon degree. We're playing our way through IGN's Top 100 Super Nintendo games and musing about our experiences here on this very show. This week, we're talking about IGN's 99th Super Nintendo game, Tiny Toon Adventures, Buster Busts Loose.
First, before we get to a breakdown of this wonderful, wonderful game, let's go ahead and talk about what we've been playing this week when we weren't playing our number 99 game, or their number 99 game that we're doing on our podcast. What have you been playing this week, Dave?
I got to be honest, man. I've been playing a shitload of Buster Busts Loose because I really wanted to beat that game. My power supply exploded in my computer. So I was used to doing a lot of PC gaming, but with that out of commission, I didn't get a whole lot of time in. But new power supply came in yesterday, threw it in there over lunch, and got some time with Borderlands 2 finally.
Yes! Yes!
I made a number. I guess that's the class, right?
Yeah, I guess. I mean...
The stealthy class.
The stealth guy.
So that's been fun. I've enjoyed the game. I didn't play Borderlands 1, but I enjoy the aesthetic and the Mad Max style post-apocalyptic setting. So it's been fun.
I'm glad you're enjoying it because I've been playing a lot of Borderlands 2 as my primary game, and it's the only game I've played this week. I have not touched any of my handheld games or anything like that. And since you said what you were playing, I'm playing as a siren. Which usually, I don't know, when I have an option to play a girl, I feel like that's probably the underplayed class, so I'll usually play the girl in a game.
Probably right.
And I feel like maybe you can judge someone's personality on whenever they're character archetypes, what they're immediately drawn to. I'm always drawn to defense, most of all. Like, I'm not a min-maxer when it comes to like trying to deal damage, stuff like that. I always like the character who has a very, very strong defense.
Yeah.
And then I like healing and buffing. So looking over whenever I was trying to decide what I wanted to do, I was like, I played a siren in Borderlands 1, but this one seems a lot different in Borderlands 2. So
at least you're not giving the answer that a lot of people would give, and it's, well, if I'm going to stare at a character for hours on end, I might as well look at one that has boobs.
That's true.
I heard that a lot in World of Warcraft. It's like, well, whatever. You just like RPing.
Getting free
with
shit.
With a vagina. Yeah.
The last time I used that excuse was in elementary school when I bought a Power Rangers
I like
wristwatch.
Where this is going. Yeah.
And I got the Pink Ranger. But I was like, why the hell did you get the Pink Ranger? What is that? Why didn't you get someone awesome? I was like, well, now I just look at my wrist and I can see this cute girl anytime I want.
What time is it? Oh, hello.
Oh, it's Amy Jo Johnson. She's going to be in Felicity one day.
We need to play together.
Yes. Me, you, our friend Blake also has it. And then looking for a fourth, so hopefully one of our other friends will get it and we'll have the complete party sometime soon, but yes. Dave and I have a lot of co-op games we always, like, dude, we're going to get this and play this together all the time. We played Diablo 3 together, but...
Several times.
Yeah.
On all the difficulty modes.
We did that for like...
Except for Inferno.
4 or 5 days. Fuck that.
Yeah.
The other day I was like, they raised the level cap. I wonder if I could do it now.
Yeah.
But...
Did you try it?
No. No. I like my mouse button hovered over the icon. It was, no. I sat the needle down and just decided not to use.
Diablo didn't have the lasting power I thought it would. Like, I really thought it was going to not be another World of Warcraft, but I thought it was going to be difficult to stop playing that game, like MMOs are typically. But it really wasn't that hard. When we got to Inferno and started running into rough patches, it was a really easy decision. I didn't want to put the time in to get past this. So I felt like we'd put enough time into it to call it a day.
Yeah, we got everything pretty well. We'd hit the level cap. We'd done. Yeah. There was no need. Yeah. But I guess maybe Diablo 2 felt so iconic to me because it was, maybe I was younger. So there's always
younger.
That nostalgia. Maybe I was. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. It was a long time ago. I don't know if I was younger or not. you know, whenever you're young and you play a game, I feel like it's easier to get into certain games and it has that nostalgia color to it. But maybe I felt at least that it was something more special back then. Like it was maybe ahead of its time. So that same formula, what, 10 years down the line, we've seen better.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of just nostalgia. And once that wore off, there wasn't need to like anything keep you around.
I'm older than you. So that's how I felt with Diablo 2. Because I didn't like Diablo 2 nearly as much as I liked the first one.
See, I didn't even play the first one.
Because I played the hell out of the first one when I was in high school. And it was like nothing I'd ever played before. And that was kind of around the time, that was before I was playing UO. And Diablo was much like the Wild West as well, where that was a lot of the fun that I had was going into other people's games and killing them and then leaving their game. And
yes, Dave is that guy.
I was.
Have you ever wondered, like, what's the face behind that guy that's just going around killing everybody? That's Dave.
What's the voice, at least?
Yeah. What's the 8-bit face behind that voice?
To be fair, I gave that up about a decade ago. My gaming style has changed drastically since then. Now I just kind of want to, like, I still enjoy multiplayer games, but I'm more concerned about completing the objectives that the developers have created and less concerned about just wreaking havoc and killing everybody.
Now you have an appreciation for it. That's nice. That's growing up as a gamer.
But it also comes full circle because now I'm the guy who's getting griefed in BK and all that. So
I guess the lesson to learn is if you haven't played a Diablo, you get one. You get one Diablo that you're going to love, and then the rest, just so choose carefully.
And I like 2 and 3. I just didn't love it like I loved the first one.
Borderlands is sort of like Diablo in that run around, loot, kill, because it's a loot fest, picking up stuff, different colored items like Diablo. But I don't know, I get much more entertainment out of Borderlands than...
Yeah, and going back to you bringing up the loot, I hear that when you play multiplayer that there are more loot drops.
More and better loot, but the difficulty also goes way up whenever you have more than one person.
Okay, so, cool. I want to try it.
Yep.
I wish I could run it on my MacBook because we could just do it like we did Diablo. We just came side over to your side. House. And, yep. Yeah. But we'll work it out.
Well, yeah, I've got my laptop. I'll come over and sit by you this time for this co-op fest.
Awesome.
Now let's get to our wonderful discussion about Tiny Toon Adventures Bust or Bust Loose. What are the specs and information you have on this game to give everybody a better idea about it?
Just in case you're not familiar with the game we're talking about this week, Tiny Toon Adventures, Bust or Bust Loose. It was developed and published for the Super Nintendo by Konami. And I had forgotten about Konami. I thought that Konami was gone for years and years, but we found out that they're still around.
Yep.
And I felt really bad. I was like, oh, I'm glad that they're still around. But then at the same time, I was like, well... It's not like they're doing anything super, super impressive.
I mean, yeah, I enjoyed the last handheld Castlevania. I always love a handheld Castlevania.
Yeah.
Period. Like, I have not played one. I've been like, oh, that's shitty. I've played plenty of console Castlevanias where I just, after Symphony of the Night, I just dropped them. But I'd forgotten about them too after I beat the last Castlevania that, oh, yeah, they do those games. And
the handhelds play more closely to Symphony of the Night, don't they?
Yes, yeah. They're the 2D Metroidvania-esque experience. I own the Castlevania for PS3. I keep telling myself I'm going to play it. It's been on my shelf for 2 years, but going through my huge backlog, it's low priority. I'll get to it at some point.
Well, and everyone who listens to the show will... Learn pretty quickly that you and I both have a lot of games that we haven't played yet, and we need to get to them, but we may or may not get to them.
We have more money than we have time, so it's just like game. That'll look good. I'll play that.
We didn't have...
Dave and I are going to have awesome retirement. It's going to be amazing retirement.
We didn't have more money than time in 1993 when Tiny Toon Adventures Bust or Bust Loose came out.
Yes.
This game was a side-scroller adventure game. You play as Buster Bunny. And it's got three different difficulty settings, has six stages, and each stage is followed up by a mini game. So that's pretty much the rundown of the game.
I mean, we have friends that we've reached out to, you know, here's the top 100 games, you know, we've asked good friends, hey, take your pick, come on, talk with us about it. No one called this game. No one even mentioned this game out of all of our friends.
Anytime we mentioned it, I feel like we'd get a chuckle.
okay, you're doing that. I had one friend who played the NES version, but that's as close as we came.
You mentioned the NES version. It's something that I discovered when I was doing some research about this game, is that Konami developed and published a Tiny Toons game for the Sega Genesis the same year as this game that we played for the Super Nintendo. It was called Buster's Hidden Treasure, I think, or something like that. I've never played it. I probably never will, but I wanted to at least see some of the gameplay, so I looked up a video on YouTube. It's a completely different game. It's still side-scrolling, but it's like a Sonic the Hedgehog ripoff. I'll post the video in the show notes so everyone can check it out and see what I'm talking about. But even like some of the same sound effects, like, you know, the spring sound effect, with the bong?
Bow.
Yeah, it's got that sound effect. It's really weird. You don't see that anymore. You don't see a developer making two completely different versions of an IP and release them in the same year on different platforms. I guess the closest analog to that nowadays is when you pre-order the game through GameStop and you get different DLC package than...
Yep. Okay, two things I want to say right now. Yeah. One, if I like go to a garage sale and I stumble across a Nomad. And this version of the Tiny Toons, I'll buy and play it then. But I wasn't one of those, you know, rich fancy kids that had a Super Nintendo and a Sega Genesis.
Yeah.
Like I think I got my Sega Genesis at a garage sale last year.
I never had one. I had several friends who did, fortunately. So I got to play some Genesis games over at their house, but no, only had a Super Nintendo, and that was pretty late in the cycle, too. What was your second point? I kind of derailed you.
My brain being ripped in two different directions when it comes to GameStop. On one hand, like, okay, GameStop is a business. Business makes, they make money, they make profit, that's what they're there to do.
Right.
And on the other hand, I can't help but get kind of frustrated with GameStop for... You know, we get these exclusive deals. We'll give you this. You pre-order it. We give you this really powerful weapon so you can run through it, defeat the game, so you can give it back to us so we can resell it again.
Yeah.
We'll give you $5 for the copy, and then we'll sell it again for $5 cheaper than what we sold it to you in the first place.
We'll give you the tools to beat it faster so we get the game faster and sell it faster.
But, you know, but it's frustrating to me as a consumer, but if I look at it objectively, I have to be like, that's still a good money-making idea. Yeah. So, but since I found Steam, I haven't had to step foot inside a GameStop except to buy a Steam gift card.
Yeah, I let my power-ups reward membership lapse just a couple months ago.
I might go in there and renew my Game Informer subscription. Those are my two uses for GameStop nowadays, Game Informer and Steam gift cards.
Every now and then, I'll get an email that, like, Kirby's Epic Yarn is a great example because I got an email. I've been wanting to play that game for a long time. Got an email saying that it was on sale. Used copies on sale for $9. Okay, I'll go in for that.
That's what I'd pay for a Wii game. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that and the Wii version, Donkey Kong for Wii. Those are two games that, I want to play those, but I don't want to pay anywhere close to retail for a Wii game nowadays.
Yeah, and something I've noticed, oddly, like going on Amazon, because I made a list of Wii games. I was tired of just looking at my Wii. And looking at it and just shaking my head like, I never play you. So I made a list of all the games for the Wii that I wanted to play. And surprise, surprise, they're all first-party games. So I jump on Amazon, typing in all the different Nintendo games, the first-party games for the Wii. Those games retain their value because I was expecting to find, Super Mario for $20, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was about $5 less than the release price.
Galaxy 2 had beaters that I'm playing, but I can't justify that. Yeah, no, I can't.
So I guess I'll wait 6 years before I play all those games.
That's fair. That's totally fair.
I just thought it was weird. You don't see that anymore. You don't see a developer spend the time, money, resources to develop two distinctly different games to release on different platforms in the same year. Just like you don't see password systems anymore, which is prevalent in this game.
But the thing about the game is playing through it, like, you don't, like, beat a level and they give you a password. nothing about the game gives you any indication of what a password is or gives you the password.
Yeah, you never get a password in Bust or Bust Loose. So I don't know. It's really odd that that is a menu option.
Do you think it was a ploy to have kids called like Nintendo Hotline or the Power Line or whatever they used to call it?
I don't know. I mean, I really can't. Where else would you get a password?
Back then, yeah. I remember having my friend had AOL that we would get on print off NBA Jam codes on his dot matrix printer, and that was the extent of what I would have the internet for.
Right.
But and then the Nintendo Power Line, I think that's what it was called.
Were you a frequent caller?
I made that mistake once.
I never called. I always wanted to, but I was always scared from the wrath of my parents.
Oh yeah. It was at my friend's house that I made the call. So then it was one of those like parents talking. Yeah. Then we got in trouble because my friend Matt and I were playing through Link's Awakening and we just could not figure out how to get through this one stage. So we just kept calling Nintendo their hotline over and over again until we figured it out and we racked up a pretty substantial charge. We fucking got past level 6 though and got the rooster you can pick up and throw.
Nice. I thought that was weird that there's a password input system, but the game never gives you a password. It's not like in Mega Man where you get the game gives you passwords. You know, if the cartridge didn't have a battery backup, that was your only way of saving your process was to give you a password. You put it in so you could start back where you left off.
Yep.
But this game doesn't give you passwords. So I don't know.
I guess since this is the top 100 and now we're on to game 99. So I feel like I've just, you know, I'm shitting on every game we've ever reviewed. So I don't want to shit on it again, but...
Go ahead and shit on it.
But yeah, Buster, I mean, I remember playing this and I was like, oh God, I love that show. I love that game. Because yeah. I remember my dad taking me to Movie Hut, you know, and I picked it up, came home, and I played the shit out of it. I think I got to whatever the stage is after the football level. Is that Sky Jinx where you're in the sky?
Buster Sky Jinx.
That's as far as I ever got in the game prior to playing it this time.
I never got past the second stage with the train, which maybe this is a good time to kind of go over the different stages so mm-hmm. everyone's kind of on the same page. There's six stages to the game. It starts out at Acme Luniversity, and then the second stage is a Western theme, which is actually really cool because the whole stage is a reference to Back to the Future 3.
I don't know. I guess I'd never really seen anything like that back then. Of course, back when I played it, I don't think I'd seen Back to the Future 3 and it just went over my head, but now I can appreciate it.
You know, it's weird to think about, and I didn't put this together until earlier today, but Back to the Future, this will make you feel old. It made me feel old. Back to the Future 3 came out just 3 years before this game did.
God, so I was in elementary school when I played this game.
So when this game came out, these Back to the Future references were pretty relevant for the time. Because like going through and playing it, I'm like, oh, this is, you know, oh, they're making reference to a really old movie. Come to find out, it really wasn't that old at the time, which, you know, just made me realize just how many new years I've put in.
In the Wild West stage, you can see the clock tower in the background when you're right. running through it, which... We had to die several times before we kind of got frustrated and started looking around. It was like, oh, hey, clock tower. The most frustrating part is when you're on the train.
Yeah, that stage.
And the train is...
The train from Back to the Future 3.
Because it's number 121 for 121 gigawatts.
And then, of course, the stage ends. Montana Max, he's got money, and he's also the villain for the stage. And... When you get to the end, you both jump on a push cart and go 88 miles per hour to end the stage.
But if you play through this game, you may want to do it like I did, which after we played through normal mode, died several times on just the second stage.
Mm-hmm.
I went in and looked the options. Easiest difficulty is children's mode. And I beat the shit out of children's mode. That made me, feel good. Like
it took about all of 12 minutes.
Yep. Because children's mode skips all the bosses.
Mm-hmm.
In the second level, you don't even go to the train part.
Right.
Skips an entire level, the level that I never even got to as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very, very abbreviated, if that was all I got out of the game when I was little, then my parents would have been very angry for paying retail price for that game.
Yeah. You know, if you want to get a taste of the game, but not be frustrated at all, that's probably a good difficulty setting to go on. But besides the second stage, I mean, I've got a whole diatribe for that second stage. But that is next to the last level, the sixth stage, the train is the hardest stage in the game. Like, that is the hardest thing in the game.
Yeah, that's, and to make it the second level is
because you've got the screen is auto scrolling, which if you know anything about 2D platforming, you never want auto scrolling because you've got that edge of the screen that's just a wall of death. And if you touch the left side of the screen, you're done. So what happens is, okay, you're on a train and the train is moving and you got to run along the top of the train to get to the engine at the front. And the train will go through, it goes through a tunnel. And that's when shit starts to go insane.
Mm-hmm.
Because you jump, I mean, in very cartoon fashion, you jump on top of the, here comes a tunnel. Okay, you jump on top of it and travel on top of the mountain that the train's going through. And you have to do that perfectly and hit every power up for, I don't know, 15 seconds, 20 seconds. I mean, that doesn't seem like a long time, but when you're doing something and you're not allowed to make a mistake for that duration.
And it's the midpoint of the game, so until you get past this section, you don't get your halfway point. So if you die, you start back there.
Right.
So you're going to die a lot and go back,
go back to the very beginning. Yeah. So that's, I just think it's really odd that that is so difficult because it follows up. I didn't finish going over the stages, but that's fine because this is a great segue. Once you get past that, stage three is super easy in comparison. It's the Haunted Mansion, and you go
through.
That
was good music.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. I think the music, a lot of the music for this game was great. But yeah, I think the Haunted Mansion had some really good tunes. Yeah. So I thought that was really easy, and the boss is easy-ish. Nothing compared to this fucking train. I mean, the train is just, what the hell?
Because I remember we spent hours on the train, then I was like, I'm going home. So I get up, I go to the bathroom, I come back, and you're at the boss of stage three.
Yeah. And after stage three is my favorite stage, and Jacob, after we recorded the last episode, if you don't know what I'm talking about, listener, just check out the last episode and you'll meet Jacob if you don't know him already. He's great. I watched him play the football on children's difficulty. So I was really excited to get to it in normal difficulty, and it is a blast.
It's fun to watch. I remember playing, I knew nothing about football as a kid. Like Kentucky, it's basketball.
Right.
Like I just, football, absolute zero. I still don't know really how to throw a football, but I loved that game. Not knowing anything about football, just playing that stage was really, really fun.
It's really weird because it is a complete change of pace for the game. I mean, it just switches from a side scroller to a little football game. And you've got, just like in football, you've got four tries to gain 10 yards, and you can do it one of two ways. You can do a running play or a pass play. And each time you don't make the fourth down, you lose a life. I had never seen that in a game before. I've seen plenty of football games, but I've never seen a version of football inside of a different game.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was pretty cool.
It was fun to watch, fun to play. It looked good. It was different. Like, yeah, that's one major feather we can put in their hat. And for the most part, I thought the little side games you did at the end of every level,
the mini games,
to try and they gave you a chance to get some of your lives back. And
yeah,
the side games, for the most part, were pretty fun.
Yeah, where they spin the wheel and there's five different characters' faces. Mm-hmm. And whichever character it lands on, you do the corresponding mini game. Which one did you like the best?
I don't remember the character's name, but the cat.
Furball,
thank you. Where you're playing racquetball.
Squash. Yeah.
You're playing squash, which when I think of squash, I only think of
the gourd.
Well, I think of Doug. Didn't they have a big thing about squash?
Oh, man. I used to watch the hell out of Doug, but I don't remember. I feel bad now.
I think there was the key to the executive squash room. I'm pretty sure that was Doug. But squash just makes me think of Doug. You'd think as a former, I still cook, but as a chef who's been out of the game for a while, you'd think, squash is a vegetable. No, Doug.
I like Hampton's game. there's all these tiles and there's a red line that he follows, and you have to move the tiles in order for him to follow the path. So it's kind of like a sliding puzzle game mixed with the time limit, because if you don't have the line connected by the time he gets there, he falls over and the game's done.
In Tiny Toons, if you're not familiar, Tiny Toons is sort of the children version of a Warner Brothers.
Yeah, of the Looney Tunes.
Of the Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
So each one has their, they have their allegory.
Right.
In Tiny Toons. And the one, I don't know the bird's name, but Tweety Birds.
I think it's Sweetie Bird, which I think is pretty lazy, and I've always thought she looks just like Tweety Bird, but she's pink and has a ribbon in her hair. I've always thought that's my least favorite character, because that was like the laziest route they could have gone. But anyway, I'm sorry.
That game was interesting once we figured out how to play it, because you have to rank. You have to anticipate what the computer's going to say, and you have to figure out which character weighs more.
You and the computer both choose, is it 5 characters?
Mm-hmm.
And you put them in order, 1 through 5, and then you don't know what the computer's choosing, and then you compare each character. So you compare the one you've picked first versus the one the computer's picked first, and whichever one weighs the most wins.
And you get a life.
And you get a life for each character that you pick that weighs the most. I guess that's the best way to describe it.
I guess, and there's not a whole lot of strategy. It's mostly luck.
Yeah.
But it was fun. It was an interesting thing I hadn't seen done before.
Yeah, I think it's fun too. I think the one that has the most luck is Plucky's, because it is just straight up bingo. You get a card that's got all these Tiny Toon characters' faces on it, and he just pulls balls out of a machine, and if it's Sweetie Bird on the ball, it marks off all the Sweetie Birds on your card. I mean, it's just complete luck. Who else is there? Oh, Babs. I guess Babs is the last one, where it's like this overhead Pac-Man style game where she has to find her friends, and Elmira and Dizzy are in the maze and trying to
Arnold. The dog that's on steroids.
Yes.
I never got far at that level. I was never good at Pac-Man. You're the Pac-Man aficionado of
this crew. You're right. I love Pac-Man, and I feel like I'm pretty good at Miss Pac-Man in particular, but it gets to a point where they make it impossible, because I played that mini game once and Arnold just ran the length of a hallway. I'd gotten all the characters on this side of the stage, but it was just impossible to get past Arnold, because he was just going laterally from one side to the other.
And once they see you, they speed up. So there's no like good timing it well.
Yeah. What did you think about the sky level? Because that was after the football game. I know you said that's the furthest you've gotten as a child.
Yeah, I don't remember all that much about it as a kid.
Yeah.
And then in children's mode, it was skipped.
Right.
So
it's got a little bit of the train stage to it, because it's split. The first part is you jumping like from balloon to balloon, which sounds really difficult, because if you miss a balloon, you know, you plummet to your death. But it's really not that bad, because there's only like a dozen jumps. Instead of going from left to right, you're just going up. So you're going up, you're going up, you're going up, and it gets to a point where it kind of turns into a pinball game. You're jumping on these flippers, and they keep flipping you up, and you have to knock certain things out to progress even further up. You get to the very top, and you find the script to the next episode. Then the whole level starts falling apart, and you have to run out of the level before it collapses. So the reason I say it's like the train level is because you're just dashing. And if you don't dash fast enough through the obstacles, the bottom of the screen catches up to you and you die. I think the whole problem with the train level and Buster's Sky Jinx, the sky level, when it starts falling apart, is the dash mechanic in the game makes this game unique, because it allows you to scale walls vertically. But it is a weird mechanic. I never felt playing the game that I could trust it. Do you know what I mean? Like when I pressed the button,
there wasn't like a consistent delay.
Exactly. I always felt like, this may or may not work.
Yep.
I mean, we'll see. So I think that dash mechanic, while it sets it apart, I think it also makes that mechanic makes the game frustrating.
Mm. I don't know if I'm atypical in that when it comes to different, you know, types of different kind of levels, that water levels have never posed that big of a problem for me. Sonic The Water Temple, I see a lot on Reddit, people talking shit about the Water Temple in Ocarina of Time.
Yeah.
I never had problems with that, but it's air levels that always get me, particularly in Mega Man games. So I know if this level, I'm sure, would have caused me more frustration than the train level. Because just, I don't know, there's always something about having to go up when you're chased, like, or Super Mario World. Tubular.
Well, tubular is hard. I mean, I don't think that has a lot to do with it being an air level more than...
It's just fucking hard anyway.
Yeah, it's just designed to be challenging. Mm-hmm. I feel like... I don't think you'd have a problem with this stage in Tiny Toons because it's not designed to be difficult. Honestly, I breezed through it. It was nothing like... I breezed through it until the end where you have to start dashing. And that goes back to what I was saying about that mechanic. I mean, it just... It sets the game apart. It makes it unique. But every time I'm forced to use it, it becomes a very unpredictable element.
Yeah, and in a very tight platformer like it tends to be, then that's just a flip a coin whether you die or not. Yeah. Let's see if I'm using a continue.
Yeah. After that, you've got the last stage, which is a complete parody of Star Wars, which is actually based on an episode of Tiny Toons. A lot of the stuff in the game comes from the cartoon. The Star Wars parody, that was an episode of Tiny Toons. It was the second one. Confession to make, once after we played the game, I was curious if any of this was out, any old episodes of Tiny Toons was available online. They've got like every episode on YouTube, like every episode. So one night I was laying in bed just watching episodes on my Kindle, and that's the second episode is the Star Wars parody.
Not like the very second episode?
Yeah.
Because I don't know, I was talking to this about Dave earlier. It felt like Tiny Toons was on for my entire childhood.
Yeah.
But it was only on for three seasons.
Three seasons.
I felt that way about like Salute Your Shorts as well. I feel like, God, that must have been so long. I have so many episodes. It's two seasons, like two short seasons.
Yeah.
Like you've got Michael and Penske and that's just it.
Yeah. They stopped production of Tiny Toons in 1992. That's a year before this game came out, which...
I guess we should go back, yeah. A weekly show about two old guys.
Which actually... I have this in my notes, but I didn't share it with you before the show because I just wanted to test your knowledge. When do you think the last Tiny Toons game came out?
Just after Buster Bust Loose. I feel like there was a handheld one. I'm going to say 95.
2002.
What came out in 2002?
A game in which Buster has a nightmare. It's for the Game Boy Advance, called Buster's Bad Dream.
Okay, I'm writing this down on my pad.
I haven't looked for any footage of the game. If it's out there, I will post it in the show notes. You can find it on tadpog.com. It is supposed to be a side-scrolling beat-em-up.
I'm going to go. I've got an R4 for my DS. I'm going to go home and I'm going to download this ROM and slap it on there and try it out.
If you play it, let me know if you want to do a special episode because I would be after. It's weird because, you know, we just played Final Fight. Let's just mash Final Fight and Buster Bust Loose together. I also found out that there was almost a Tiny Toons game for the PlayStation 2. Apparently,
I'm making a very strange look at Dave right now.
Apparently, this was a very lucrative IP for games.
I guess everybody had good memories of the show.
I guess so. I don't know, man. That really, really made me stop and question things. Why in the world?
PS, yeah. That's a good game for a 1992 show.
Okay, if you could choose to play as any character, this is my weird way of asking you who your favorite Tiny Toon character is. In this side-scrolling beat-em-up, you could play as one character. Who would it be?
It would be a music and rhythm game on the Nintendo DS and using the microphone that you can shout into.
Yeah.
And it would be a game about Foulmouth, who is the Tiny Toons character who was constantly censored because he would curse all the time.
Right.
Except when he was around babies. Rooster. So it would just be a music and rhythm game where you're just yelling curses into your Game Boy DS.
I like that. I like that a lot. I don't have nearly as good an answer, but my favorite character was always Go-Go Dodo. And
that would be a weird-ass game.
I think there was one for the NES. It's like some Wacky Land game.
I think you're right. I do feel like I've...
I vaguely remember playing it as a kid, but I found out that there were a shitload of Tiny Toons games. So, like, going back and looking through the list, I know I played some of these, but I can't tell which is which.
That's the same way I feel about Simpsons games.
Yeah, and well...
We can do a whole other special about Simpsons games.
Yeah, you're right.
And how awful we are at them.
That's not our fault. Except for the arcade game.
Which we beat. Yeah, it's true. Except we beat that the at the arcade cabinet.
Those games are really poorly designed.
I feel like we're playing this with Jacob. Jacob had a pretty good statement about Buster Bust Loose, which was, it really is just essentially a memory game. Like, you playing through a level and beating a level like on your first try isn't going to happen. Mm-hmm. But once you learn all the obstacles that are coming at you, then you can... It's not nearly as difficult except for the train level.
Yeah.
Well, even when you know what's coming, it's still...
Yeah, it's a matter of trying to execute something with that dash mechanic. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that's a great point. I think that's a shortcoming of the game, that a lot of it is just memorizing the level. That being said, that still exists in games today. It was certainly more prevalent in the early 90s. But yeah, I think that's a good criticism and a really good point. If you're looking for something that's going to challenge you after playing it a dozen times, Tiny Toon Adventures probably isn't it.
Yeah, replay value is pretty low.
Yeah.
But I have to say, again, you comment on it in the Final Fight episode, and I'll comment on it here. I have to always bow down to Dave's patience when it comes to games like this.
I'll wear a game down.
Because, yeah, I will... Right, I guess this comes under another point I want to make. Like, I don't want to seem like a whiny bitch about difficulty. I enjoy a challenging game.
Yeah.
But for me, it's a fine line between, you know, a challenge that satisfies you and then just something that's just frustrating.
Soul crushing.
Yeah, it's just when something's like annoyingly frustrating as opposed to like a challenge that I feel like I can sink my teeth into, that's when I'm just like, all right, bucket, time to do something else. That train level... Except for on children's mode.
Fucking no train level.
Nope. I admire Dave because he, even when I was just sitting there like, I would have quit this game an hour ago, but Dave's just soldiering through so he can have this game and have this ready to talk to you guys about it on Tadpog. He's the only guy that I know that when games that have multiple, especially like fighting games, I know I've seen you, you'll play a fighting game, amp up to the next difficulty. You know, beat it, amp it up again. And like the stars on Street Fighter, beat it on 5, beat it on 6, beat it on 7, beat it on 8. Like I'll play through it a few times and it's like, all right, I got what I want. Dave does all the difficulties and all the challenges.
Yeah, it's a lot of that comes from being a kid and not having money and just playing a game until you've done everything in it. Like that's something that's stuck with me forever. It's a hard habit to break.
Part of me wants to say, like, this is, of course, it's probably just a lofty, like, I'm going to do this one day. If I am a father one day, then I would like to say that I would, hopefully my child will be a gamer and I won't be like, you know, have some jock kid who doesn't want to play.
Who bullies you.
Yeah. Hopefully, and then I'll buy them a game and be like, I'll buy you another game when you get 100% completion on this game.
I thought
and have them get the full experience of it, and then I'll get them another one.
For a second, I thought you were going to say, when you get 100% on your next test, but...
No.
That's not nearly as important as...
They don't have to study, just play this game, just get everything on it.
Yeah, complete all the challenges in Cooking Mama.
Get all the recipes 5-star, then you get another game.
Which I've been thinking, Cooking Mama might actually be Yuki's mama.
If you don't get that reference, go ahead and listen to last week's episode. Then listen to this one again, and that'll be really funny.
Otherwise, you're shit out of luck.
And then right before we started this, you made a powerful statement, a pretty blanket statement about everybody concerning Tiny Toons. If you're someone in your late 20s, early 30s, then...
You, at one point in your life, knew the entire lyrics to the opening theme song. Like, it's just a given. And maybe I shouldn't say entire lyrics, but if you don't believe me, listener, go to YouTube, open up a browser, open up a new tab, go type in Tiny Toon Adventures theme song. And halfway through, I guarantee you it'll come back to you because that's exactly what happened. And since we've been playing this game, this whole entire week, I have probably sang the damn opening song at least once a day because it's just in my head. It's just in there and it's not leaving anytime soon.
Because I feel like, yeah, that and Animaniacs are there. And those games are linked because the art.
Yeah, they were both done by Warner Brothers Studios. Man, I'm going to get really nerdy. The art director for Tiny Toons was Paul Dini, which a lot of people know from Batman the Animated Series because he did the writing for Batman. And let's tie this back into video games. He's one of the reasons that Arkham City and Arkham Asylum are such great games because he did the writing for them. So they're written like an animated series show or like a comic book because he also wrote Batman comics. And Bruce Timm also worked on Warner Brothers animation, and he worked with Paul Dini on the animated series. He also, of course, did work on Tiny Toons. So Tiny Toons came about when Warner Brothers reopened its studio with Steven Spielberg. Throw that name around, and you can probably make anything happen.
Mm-hmm.
So he threw his hat in to produce the show or co-produce it or whatever, and all this great stuff started happening. So yeah, if Tiny Toons hadn't happened, we might not have the wonderful Batman animated series. To add the fourth tangent in this in this little speech, the Batman animated series game is actually one of the games we'll be playing.
I've never played that. I haven't either.
I'm really looking forward to that. But my point is, if Tiny Toons hadn't happened, we wouldn't have Animaniacs or Batman the animated series or anything like that.
There are some good roots there.
Yeah. I guess we should probably get to what we think about the game.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we've probably rambled enough about it. I'll let you go first because I think your opinion may be a little bit lower than mine.
It crossed that territory into frustrating for me. I guess the design and where the difficulty spikes were and things like that were strange.
Yeah.
But some of the ideas and the characters, and the football level, the mini games, like it had enough. Like, so I'm not going to completely shit on it. I'd say it was okay.
Yeah. Well, that's better than I thought. I mean, I thought you were going to be a lot harder on it than that. I also think it's okay. I would give it an okay plus.
I think it's right at home at 99.
Yeah, I agree. I think IGN missed the mark putting Final Fight at 100 and putting just the first Final Fight in there as opposed to one that has more than one player.
Mm-hmm.
Tiny Toons, Buster Bust Loose at 99. I think that's solid. The game has a lot of good stuff. It really does capture the feeling of the show because everything is bright and all the sprites are animated. They're constantly moving. You know what I mean? Like everything, there's just motion all over the game. Everything is moving all the time.
I can see why as a kid, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. And then the backgrounds are really well done. That's when we were talking about in stage two, where you see the Back to the Future references. That's what made me start thinking about the backgrounds. So the next time I played through, I made note to pay special attention to the backgrounds. They're gorgeous. The art direction is fantastic because they do a great job of capturing the feel of those hand-painted backgrounds that the show's used, but converting them to a pixelated format. It's really cool. Unfortunately, I think there were some problems with the pacing, and we've gone over the second stage just spiking in difficulty. I also think the final stage, the Star Wars parody, spikes as well, which is expected for a final stage.
Yeah, it's appropriate.
But the spike at the second stage, I think, is pretty poor decision. I honestly think that the second stage would have been perfect if it were second to last. I think then I'd have less problems with the game.
Yeah. And then the soundtrack, if I can find the soundtrack,
yeah.
I would game to it. I would run my Pathfinder, which Pathfinder is D&D for Dungeons and Dragons-esque. I'm the dungeon master, game master for those of our group pretty frequently. So I would game to like stage three. It's all pretty good music.
And the music to the final stage is great too. When we were playing, I remember mentioning this to you. There are several tracks in there where I was thinking, wow, this could fit into like Chrono Trigger or something.
Yes.
Like, this music is really very good. True. Now, of course, the stage two music isn't that great and you have to hear it over and over again.
Yep,
so
that's true. It's the show's theme for
it's
part
the show's
of it with
theme,
a slightly Western
like,
twang.
Yeah.
But for those of you who want a deeper philosophical and something to touch your soul as far as a review, I would give this game, as far as beards and glasses go,
yeah,
one Winfield.
Now, what is that?
A Winfield is, it's a beard where you have the chops that come down and connect to the mustache, but you don't have anything on your chin.
Okay.
So just imagine that. Think of my other in-depth reviews as far as beards and glasses.
Right.
And you'll understand why of no specific color.
Okay.
One Winfield.
Okay. How many glasses?
Two pairs of fake Oakleys.
Oh, okay.
So just think about that. A Winfield and two pairs of fake Oakleys.
I can't help but think of them all in the same face.
Yes. Even better. Think of a face, two pairs of fake Oakleys, and a Winfield, and that is Tiny Toon Adventures, Bust or Bust Loose.
I think that's a great description of the game. Also, I don't know how the hell we made it this entire time without making one single Arrested Development joke. That's all I've got, man. I'm going through my list, and...
Well, before we get to shout-outs, then, I have one non-game-related thing I want to bring up and ask our listeners. And if our listeners have any information they want to leave on our Facebook about it...
This sounds like the end of an Unsolved Mystery or something.
It is, and it came today before I came over here. I was with my dad, and ever since I got my first car when I was 16... My dad's a car guy.
Yeah.
I know nothing about cars. My dad has been like painting cars, mechanic work, like my entire life, just on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since I got my first car, he's always told me, he's like, well, Tyler, I put very tall tires on this car. It's going to say you're going like 60, but you're really going like 62, 63 miles an hour. And of course, when I was 16, I was like, oh, okay, well, I don't want a ticket. And he's kind of kept telling me that my whole life. And when he told me that again today, my wife, her tires completely went out on her car and she had to have four new ones. And he was like, oh, I know where another one of these cars is. I'll go and I'll put them on for you. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay, great. So then today he was like, when you drive that, you need to be pretty careful because I put, you know, four tall tires on that car. So you're going to be going a little faster. I was, you know, now that I'm 28, that does reek slightly of like bullshit to me now. I mean, I understand he's probably telling me that so I won't speed. He wants to keep me safe. But if anybody has heard of this or knows if my dad is just full of shit and trying to tell me about these tall tires, let me know on our Facebook.
I've always heard that the tire size can affect
gas mileage.
Well, I've heard it can affect the speed of the car. Mm-hmm. I just don't know which way it goes.
Okay.
I don't know. And I also don't know if it's true.
I mean, I'm sure I could probably Google, I'm not sure, tall tires go faster speedometer inaccuracy, but I'm not sure. If anybody knows anything about this, let me know. Just let me know.
Bonus points to the first person to post on the Facebook group. Let me Google that for you. Actually, there's something I want to cut in because I did want to talk about the bosses because I think that's something that's kind of special about the game. The way that bosses work in this game are a little unconventional. And that also kind of ties into the show itself because it's a cartoon and it's in the style of Looney Tunes. So there's a lot of cartoon violence, you know, mallets, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But there's never really any like direct conflict that ends with someone being defeated. There's plenty of cartoon violence, but stuff's kind of resolved magically. You know, the first stage at Acme Luniversity, the boss is Dizzy Devil, and there's these conveyor belts where what do you have to do to stop Dizzy from destroying the cafeteria? We have to feed him desserts. You have to feed him a dessert 9 times.
Nine. Because I know we kept like, how many banana splits do we have to give him?
And nine is a weird number because the first time I counted and I was like, 9? I must have missed one because there's no way it's 9. It's got to be 10. Well, the second time I went through, it was 9 again. So I was like, all right, maybe it's just 9. That's weird.
So if someone asks you, how many desserts does it take to fill a Tasmanian devil? The answer is 9.
9. And that carries on. The locomotive engine itself is the boss of stage 2, where you just destroy it. So it's kind of weird. It's this is obviously where they got the idea for Shadow of the Colossus.
You're destroying something so beautiful and grand.
And the whole level's a train. You get to the end, you realize it's also the boss you have to kill. And then some levels obviously don't have bosses, and I think it's a great decision that they didn't shoehorn a boss into the football level or the sky level, that kind of stuff. So that's one thing I really thought they did well. They made smart decisions about when to use bosses and how to use them.
We got a few shout outs to make for fans that definitely, you know, went out of their way to tell us they enjoyed the show and help promote us and make us just generally feel good about ourselves. So we need to give a shout out to Dennis Robinson.
Robinson.
Dennis Robinson. Eli Phillips. Father Wiley Ammons. Our dear Josh Nance, who will be here next week for Uniracers.
Yep.
Your lovely wife, Nikki Moore.
Yep, she wrote us a review on iTunes. Thank you, dear wife.
And then wish a happy birthday to our good friend, James Livingston, who is sadly only getting older. We're sorry about you having another birthday, James, but we love you.
We do, and I'm glad that you're our friend for multiple different reasons, but mainly because you're older than I am, and there aren't many who are, so... Thank you for continuing to live another year, James.
Even though I may have accused him of bullshitting me for the last 12 years or so that I've been driving, give a special shout out to my mom and dad, because my wife and I bought a house, and it had to be completely gutted and renovated. I get up early, I go over there, I come back, I'll play some of the game, some Borderlands. Go to bed, get up, do the same thing again because I'm on Christmas break from classes.
Yeah.
But my parents have gone above and beyond to be there. They're not even going to live there. And they're helping me out on every part of it. So if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have a place to live pretty much my whole life up until this very day. So a special shout out and thanks to my mom and dad for cleaning and generally just being awesome with handyman, renovation, everything.
We need to work it out so we can get your dad and my dad to do an episode of Tadpog where they talk about Mortal Kombat.
Because it turns out we didn't meet until
college,
yeah. Like my freshman year of college. And it turns out we were raised by two very, very similar men who coincidentally have only played these same kind of... They're not really gamers, but they both love Mortal Kombat. They both love Sonya Blade.
Yep.
So wait for whenever we get to Mortal Kombat, just wait for the special Radpog episode.
Radpog.
Randy and David. So thanks for listening, everybody. You can find the show on iTunes so you don't miss the next episode where we'll be talking about Uniracers. While you're there, don't forget to subscribe and give the show a 5-star rating and write a review. It would be very, very helpful to us.
Yeah, we'd appreciate it. The superficial reason for asking you to do a review is because the more reviews we have, the higher our ranking will be on iTunes, which means we'll get more listeners. But also, feel free to use the review as a way of giving us feedback. Because as much as I'd love to hear you say great things about the show, I'd also like to know if there are things about the show you don't like. You know, we want to fix them. Mm-hmm. We want to make the show as good as it can be.
That's true.
We'll be back next week. Like Tyler said, we'll be talking about Uniracers. I am excited? I don't know.
Well, once we put it in, we'll see how excited. Once we play the game. No, exactly once we put it in. Once we put it in, we'll see how good it is.
In the meantime, if you can't wait for more Tadpog, you can leave us feedback on tadpog.com. You can also find some of the older episodes there. By older, I mean 3 weeks old.
Classic Tadpog.
You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Tadpog. Our intro song is Moves by Sycamore Drive, and a link to the track can be found in the show notes at tadpog.com.
See ya, Internet.